Hello, and welcome to Androids and Assets. I'm Steven.
And I'm Marshall.
Today we're doing a very special episode. We're doing a policy droid, which is a show where we talk about the very real threats facing our world and what we think can be done about them.
The last one was like a mediocre hit.
Yeah.
So we thought let's do it again.
Let's do it again. Let's bust off. Let's do some hybridize our two loves, policy and science fiction. So yeah, so it's near future and far future sci-fi meets a policy white paper. So when it comes to threats, there's really only one worth talking about: the accumulation of carbon in the atmosphere. That's right. Today
I was going to say the same thing. We had the same answer.
That's right. Today we're talking about something very important to us as a podcast: climate change. As people who know small human children, nieces, nephews, and so on, who will be alive when shit starts going down, we have, I think, a very strong vested interest in doing things now so they don't have to endure hell on Earth in their old age. The climate is something we need to think about, talk about, and build consensus around if we ever hope to have any meaningful response to it. Marshall, how are you feeling about our current climate change response?
Oh, we're fucked.
It's bad.
Like, yeah. You say response, but that's generous, right? Like
our non-response response. Yeah.
That's like, I don't know.
But what about
how do I feel about my building's response to snow in the winter? I don't know. There's snow in the winter.
Well, luckily you won't have snow in the winter soon.
That's true. Yeah.
Thank you, condo board. Solution to climate change: shut down Marshall's condo board. But in all seriousness, yes, the response to climate change is not good, if not actively harmful or exacerbating. And we'll talk about that a little more. I think the thing is, why are these two crazy idiots talking about climate change? What's the connection to science fiction? And I think for us, I think we feel that it's we're talking about, because I think to some extent it's about the future, and it's very important to science fiction, both in the past in its science fiction's role in kind of laundering and dismissing it, generally through rosy views of the future that we're gonna figure it out, or in appealing to some sense that like the power of technical innovation is so unstoppable and incredible that it will overcome all such obstacles.
We see more and more science fiction that is actively dealing with climate change. Like it says, climate change is happening, and here's a result of it. And that's really great. I'm kind of the mind that if you set your science fiction in the present or future, and you don't directly address climate change, your work of fiction has failed.
Yeah, there's a problem.
Yeah,
yeah.
Like, it's 2100 and Earth is fine. I'm like, okay, whoa, square that circle for me, because I'm not going any further in this book until I know what's happened.
Until we address the giant Anthropocene in the room,
the giant dead elephant.
Yeah, the giant.
The elephants are going to die, and it's a travesty.
Yeah. So we're not climate scientists, obviously. We largely go off of what other people have told us, and largely based on the Paris Climate Report and its ensuing estimates. So, and we're generally going to accept the Paris Climate Report as fact, because at this time it's the best thing kind of available to us. And it paints a very, very grim picture, right? That action is urgently needed, that we have to stop emitting as soon as possible, if not rapidly begin sequestering carbon and returning it into the Earth. It is no longer enough that we simply stop emitting. We have to begin to stabilize the carbon cycle if we hope to avoid the worst impacts of climate change. And it's also important to note that some of the adverse effects are now inevitable. And the more we emit now, the worse things will be, and the more work we'll have to do later. So that's a big deal.
That is a very big deal.
So at this point, as Marshall alluded to earlier, there isn't, I'm not satisfied with the response. I think in general, there's like, what the response has been largely characterized by sort of market centric approaches to incentivize people to modify their behavior. Yeah. Like, I think there's been like, I think the big one people point to is like, home renovation credits, encouraging people to install high efficiency appliances or furnaces, those types of things, as well as then like also, I think, and a big one in the U.S. is the federal government in the U.S. and California also providing economic incentives for EVs. Tesla being coming the largest automaker, despite selling very few cars, largely because they lucked into this magical category where they're able to soak up all of this green money to make emissionless vehicles that mostly, for the most part, no one can afford.
yeah, for sure. They're getting better. I do think that they have I hate to give Tesla any credit for anything, and it's probably not even their due, but they did increase some excitement around electric
vehicles. They did a lot for public relations. And I think they funded some technological development.
Yes.
Which
particularly around batteries, but so like even forcing the hand of, you know, the big four automakers to be like, okay, fine.
Yeah.
We'll compete with Tesla.
Yes. Yeah. It's not enough.
Oh God, no.
it's nowhere near enough. Right.
Like you said, like even if we got if every single person this year got rid of their current vehicle and moved to an electric vehicle, that's not enough.
That would be woefully inadequate. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because most of the emissions.
I'm not saying don't do it. If you're thinking of buying a vehicle, please choose an EV.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Because. And based on the strength of that argument alone, you should get an EV.
I'm convinced. I think it's like, yeah. However, most emission is actually not like driving is a large emitter, but the biggest emitter by far is grid generation, right? The world emits most of its carbon generating electricity to power people's homes and businesses and to do industrial processes like iron smelting or steel manufacturing and those types of things, right?
I thought it was coal fired stoves in the global south.
Right. that's a lot of people concerned about that. Yeah, a lot of. I mean, they emit carbon too. I think probably negligible when you compare.
My act is a lot better if you can see it visually. That I'm not serious about a few people. Well, a lot of people with stoves, and sure, they're not great, but also they're not the ones that got us into the situation or are keeping us in this situation.
Yeah. Well, if you look at a lot of people burning, like the people that are burning like in the global south, they're mostly burning like twigs and feces and, you know, things that are like in the natural carbon cycle. They're not bringing carbon up out of the earth. They're not bringing dead dinosaurs back and putting them in the air.
Yeah. I mean, aside from a significant coal consumption.
Yeah. All this to say, things are extremely dire.
Yeah.
And there's no real reaction. So now we look to science fiction to guide us, to show us the luminaries have looked into the future, these brilliant nerds.
Yeah, science fiction authors have like a huge responsibility here that like they get to shape a lot of views on things.
Yeah.
And science, like climate is one of those things. The world that we live in today is seeing a lot of effects of climate change. We in Canada experienced a fucking heat dome, and it was like 5 days long, and I felt like dying. And we can expect that, more of that, more regularly, and higher temperatures. So there's something real great to look forward to. But there's been a lot of weather-related phenomena the world over.
Yeah. More desertification, forest fires.
being, yeah, I think. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like a higher number for our fires, desertification, storms that we say like, oh, that was a one in a century storm that are happening
every other year.
Yeah, or annually or twice in a year. And you're like, yeah. Well, I guess we just lose Louisiana. Like, it's fine.
Do you remember in 2017 when three hurricanes lined up and took turns fucking the entire Gulf of Mexico?
Yeah.
Yeah. Just casually, you know.
Because it just happens. You know, Texas, if they don't get a hurricane, they get torrential rains.
Or a snowstorm.
Yeah, or a snowstorm. Because that's what it does to us. What was the big one? Katrina?
Yeah.
That, like, sunk...
Yeah, broke the levee and drowned and sunk New Orleans.
Yeah.
And then Chris Kyle, American sniper, just started just murdering looters in the street. Cool dude.
Climate event right there.
And then the hospitals just started euthanizing people randomly. Like, Thunderdome is the new law.
For-profit hospitals. Public hospitals. Yeah. Kept their patients alive. So there's a tick in the column of public health care.
No one looks good from the Hurricane Katrina. And
it was a terrible thing. Then there was a couple of years ago or whatever when New York was just blasted and they were like, well, who knows, folks, we might lose portions of the city. Yeah. Sorry, what? And that's a terrifying thought. There's a lot of crises that are happening, and responses to them are troubling.
Yeah.
So I think of, like, not a good public response, but a response that provides a lot of information or, something for us to look at is the response to the 2008 financial crisis.
Yeah.
Big bailouts, lots of money was created by the government to ensure that some big corporations didn't go completely belly up. And that the banks that had all consolidated from being a number of large, competitive, small banks that you had a banker you could trust to Wells Fargo,
to a consortium of predatory lending institutions, performing mass financial manipulation.
And they were like, "Well, we have built a world in which it is essential that you have a bank account, so we actually can't let these institutions go away."
No matter,
we'll be fucked even more.
No matter how many felonies they committed, and how many millions of people they screwed over.
And so the response to that was a really horrible one, that favored global capital, and blamed, in a lot of ways, average borrowers. People end up losing their jobs, and it was like, well, you're probably going to lose your house over this. But don't worry, we insured the bank, so the bank isn't going to lose any money when you go belly up on your mortgage. Mm-hmm. Well, what about me? Well, guess you should have made a better choice. There's a problem here. And so this response, I think, starts to sort of like illustrate for us government's focus and who they view as their actual constituents.
Yeah. Because to add to a little bit, like what happened in 2008 was a bunch of people got mortgages. They structurally, financially, over a long period of time, could not pay. Their risk was super high. And the bank, if it was being responsible, never would have given them loans, but gave them loans anyway because they knew they could take those loans, bundle them together in something called a credit package, and sell it to someone else. And they could stick another sucker with the bill for the mortgage. And so then they were incentivized to create more loans. Anyway, this meant that a lot of people, their homes got foreclosed on, but despite the fact that the bank got paid for the bad debt.
Exactly.
So what happens is the bank got paid for your house, and then the bank would turn around and kick you out and sell your house and then profit on it. And this led to a lot of evictions, a lot of deaths, suicides, other health crises, you know, people getting heart attacks and so on. So
and there were some other, you know, knock-on effects of like,
yeah, mass vacancies and
I meant like other corporations and things. Like this was when like the automakers were like, we're all gonna go bankrupt.
Yeah, Ford, Chrysler. Chrysler was bought by Fiat because it fell into insolvency.
Yeah, and I think like Canada purchased
Yeah, the Oshawa Automotive Fabricating Plants.
I don't know if they purchased a plant necessarily or specifically, but they purchased like shares in a company and said, like, yeah, we own part of you now.
Yeah, they gave a billion.
Gave like big loans.
Yeah, they gave $1 billion to the Chrysler Fiat, the newly formed Chrysler Fiat consortium, and to which Chrysler Fiat then waited 5 years and closed the factory.
Yeah, and well, they took all of the bad assets and spun them off into another company and took all of the good money and kept it for themselves. It was really a savvy business move.
Yeah, savvy.
If you look at it.
So this is in many ways the wrong response to have, because what you had was a crisis, things got out of control, bad things were happening to people, and the government said, we'll take care of the finances and the large industries, and everyone else can get fucked.
Yeah. And so, you know, like I, for response to this, I really like New York 2140, Kim Stanley Robinson from a couple years back. And it talks about like a future where New York actually is underwater, or portions of, you know, like downtown New York or whatever. I don't know my New York geography all that well.
You don't know your boroughs?
That's right. I'm so sorry.
Well, Staten Island is destroyed.
portions of it under, like the downtown that is famous is underwater. Manhattan. But they have like walled off. They have new dikes that are put up, and they're like, we saved some of New York, but some of it is underwater. And there are some people who, you know, like, live in that underwater section. Mm-hmm. But they live in like high rises, and they've waterproofed their buildings.
Yeah.
Right. And so they can survive in that area. And there's other people who like scavenge the rest of the buildings that are waterlogged and unsafe and whatnot. But there's another storm that comes and causes huge problems for everybody. And it threatens to like overflow those dikes. And it's a very bad time again, but the people band together and they have sort of like here's what we need to do. Here's an option, right? We can come out of this better, stronger, more resilient if instead of just bailing out the stock companies who knew this was coming, who predicted mm-hmm. it, and sold, you know, like they had a margin on like the climate event, the coming climate event.
Yeah, yeah.
And
you
could bid on like how likely is it to have happen?
Yeah.
Right. And then when it did happen, everyone gets fucked.
Yeah.
But some people get rich off of it. But even if you're getting rich off of it, though, New York is still gone.
I'm so okay because I own Bolivia's water.
Yeah. So. And so they got to the government and they talked to the political leaders, and they really put pressure on them as like citizens and said, look, don't bail them out this time. Or if you're going to bail them out, put restrictions on things and say, here's the thing, we own large portions of you now.
Yeah.
And we're going to run you in a way that's beneficial for the country, not for your shareholders. Mm-hmm. And we're going to rebuild with the capital and with this investment, and we're going to rebuild in a resilient way that's going to give homes to people who need homes, and is going to help get the water out of New York. Mm-hmm. and kind of build a model of
sustainability and development.
Right. Yeah.
Even when it is not necessarily optimally profitable.
Right.
There's a whole bunch of things that are, and it doesn't even mean it's not profitable. It's just not super profitable.
Yeah, exactly. Right? It's not the most profitable option. And so they do this toward the end of the book, and they're like, here's a model of like sustainability that you could have going forward. And that to me is sort of like a blueprint for governments that they could look at and say, oh, so we could help citizens? And that would be lovely.
Yeah, and so this is, so some people are, so this idea, I think, is kind of coalescing in the political discourse with people talking about the Green New Deal.
Yeah.
You know, is to evoke the Roosevelt and, you know, the world and the Depression era and the New Deal of, like, Keynesian economic response.
big government response as a policy response to this, saying we're going to spend a lot of money addressing this big problem. We're going to make sure that people get employed, and we're going to make sure that average people are better off. And that's kind of the idea behind a Green New Deal, which is at times nebulous.
Yeah.
Until something actually like happens with a Green New Deal, it's hard to talk about what is or was the Green New Deal, right?
Because it keeps getting, because it keeps getting deferred and stalled and redefined. And it's never been articulated or adopted as a policy.
Right.
Anywhere. So, and then there's also maybe some issues with like some of the underlying assumptions about green energy, which we'll talk about maybe a little bit later. So that was heaven. And this is where people are as close as we can get to it. That was the good outcome.
Right.
Like
a really bad outcome is American war.
Okay.
I mean, I think it's a bad outcome at least.
There are some militiamen somewhere who are very excited.
Omar El-Akkad. And it's a fantastic, it's a really fantastic novel. And everyone should read it. It's mind-blowingly good. It talks about American states, and like in the South, there's like four states, I think, that refuse in the future, refuse to stop burning gasoline.
Oh, yeah.
And they become the new red states, and they secede from the Union and form their own country. I think they actually did secede. Sure. And then around them, there's like what they call purple states, places that are sympathetic, but couldn't actually like make it work. They were like, we need to stay in the United States or we're completely screwed. So they maybe don't follow the laws super strictly or like enforce them super strictly, but they are technically part of the United States. And then there's like the Northern Democrat blue states.
The Union has declared gasoline burning illegal.
Yes. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They have.
And so like Florida is mostly underwater at this point.
They're abolitionist to oil burning. To abolish oil burning.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to figure out this American war.
Florida is underwater. Or at least large portions of it, as are, you know, other parts of the South. And what has happened is that there's a lot of people who are forced from their homes, and so they're refugees in these countries.
Climate refugees inside the U.S.
Right.
As there are currently from Puerto Rico, Florida, Louisiana, this is, Texas. Like,
they may not be American citizens right now, but there are climate refugees right now.
From internal to the U.S. like people, they did live somewhere in the U.S. and now they can't live there anymore because
I'm sure that's true. So there's people who like lose their home because they don't have they lose their home, and they're trying to get out of the South into the North because they want to be in the North. But they get put in a refugee camp in the South, and they're supposed to have a way of getting out of it, but they never do. And then they get like radicalized in the camp because there's, you know, aggressions back and forth between the two. And it does break out into hostilities, and there's a war being fought of people who are like just denying the facts of climate change and that burning gas is a cause of it. And they're like, well, even if it is the cause of it, we need to keep doing it for our economy.
Yeah.
But their economy is in tatters.
Yeah.
Because they're underwater.
Yeah. Yeah. Because no amount of oil burning makes up for not being having clean air or soil.
Yeah.
Or
and like with the change in temperature, like I think Georgia couldn't grow peaches anymore. So it was like, we're done. How can we possibly recover from this? So, you, like, when your main industries, you start to lose them as a result of climate change, you're not protecting your economy anymore. It just, like, you just can't.
Yes, and I think that's very salient. Of course, the comparison to the American Civil War and slavery is palpable, right? And that they had also reached a point with slavery where they were in a type of economic stagnation, but their overall economic growth picture didn't so much matter as much as serving the interests of the planter class,
right?
Who were the primary constituents to the Southern government. And I think this concept you're describing in this book is very salient. A very interesting nonfiction book by Andrew Nick Forick called The Energy of Slaves. The premise of The Energy of Slaves is basically that burning hydrocarbons has essentially given, you know, because it releases energy and it creates the capacity to do work in a physics sense, it is in some ways akin to slavery, right? That we found this incredible source of power and had an economic transformation that did for economies in many ways what slavery did, particularly when it became able to power machines to do increasingly complex tasks. And I think that he makes an argument that then oil-burning societies then kind of began to take on the attributes of slave-owning societies in many respects.
Well, that's interesting.
And so I think this is like, and that idea is really kind of like mind-blowing, particularly when you consider this, right? You know, and it is, obviously there are differences. You know, I think there's criticisms you can make of that argument, but I think in general it's very compelling, right?
Yeah.
And then ultimately that being a slave-owning society is damaging to the ruling, to the master class or the ownership class, and I think we definitely suffer from that. And one of the big things is that, you know, like eventually the people you've enslaved come back, you know, and demand justice of you, right? Eventually. And
the dinosaurs are going to come back.
Yeah, and then Jurassic Park. No, but I think in this case, the thing that we're exploiting is the Earth itself, and the Earth will exact its justice, and we can count on it.
Yeah, I mean, like we described, we're seeing it now.
Yeah, and I think that's very true. You know, so I just thought that was really cool. Like that's the comparison to the, you know, and how that would occur. You know, so you evoke a historical metaphor to reveal things about kind of like the carbon policy. And again, how the political deadlock that defines the U.S. currently is the exact same political structure that defined the Confederacy in the past. And they did not win, largely because of when you have that type of decision-making structure in that, again, when you have that narrow constituency, you also don't make good decisions.
No, not at all.
It makes it hard for you to do things like persecute an effective war and do the things you need to do. And then, like, if we really fuck it up, here's the things we can look forward to.
Which
is N.K. Jemisin's The Broken Earth trilogy, starting with the fifth season. Holy fuck.
Yeah. Like, the moon will be destroyed.
And then by extension the entirety of the Earth. So in the fifth season, essentially, spoilers for the Broken Earth trilogy, if you haven't read it, it's extremely good. All of the books in it are excellent. But it essentially posits a world where not climate change per se, but people harnessing energy from the Earth to do magic led to the Earth pushing back against them because they tried to take too much and everything was destroyed, and now people live like in scared, hard-fought feudal fortresses and war against each other.
The Earth became almost uninhabitable.
Yeah, and now people fight. People have very horrible, difficult lives trying to eke out a living in unbelievably adverse circumstances. And it's grim, folks. I think.
But it's a very good warning.
Yeah.
Because that's what we would have to look forward to,
not just the loss of creature comforts, but then I think that pressure would the pressure it placed on people from scarcity, like we have relative abundance and we enforce artificial scarcity, but then we get real scarcity and that would drive a whole bunch of conflict, that would make us all less safe and make life much more difficult,
but we would have on average 5 more growing days annually
in Alberta. That's true.
So kind of a roll of the dice.
Yeah, but you have to remember Lethbridge has had no, like the Southern Alberta grain belt has had no significant rain, and the St. Mary River Irrigation District has been unable to compensate, and there has been massive systemic crop failure in southern Alberta. So we
all of Alberta right now is in a real bad way.
Yeah. So it doesn't, if you can't, so if the glacier dries up and the rivers don't flow, you can't irrigate, so you can't grow anything. So your number of growing days is ostensibly irrelevant. Did we have another book?
I don't have any more books. I do have a couple of movies. Yes, The Wandering Earth. It is a climate change movie. In it, I think it's that the Earth, the sun is going to go supernova.
Yeah, yeah, the sun's going to explode.
So it's like, well, that will kill everybody. It's a terrible climate event. And so they have like an enormous public works project to outfit the Earth with drives.
With engines.
Engines.
Yeah, to make it a spaceship.
Yeah. And then they can just fly Earth far enough away or behind another planet or something.
To another sun. So everyone is going to live in underground caves. So they build caves.
Right.
They move all of the human population underground.
Yes.
And then they build big engines. And then they fly.
They're going to fly to another sun.
Fly the planet to another sun.
It's going to take a while, but
yeah, and so it's about this. Yeah, so it's about the guy who then there's like a shepherd, there's like a pilot craft that flies ahead of them, and they have. And it's largely about them, and then their families back on Earth, and
yeah,
it's all crazy.
But it does mean that the people will go through a period of deprivation,
mm-hmm.
Living underneath the Earth, also like without a sun for a long period of time, and the government responds to say, okay, we can save humanity if we all pull together and give up everything we know. We can do this with the existing technology. Like, we don't need to invent a new thing. We just need to actually like do it. We just need to buckle down and get it done.
Fucking do it.
and then they do it.
Yeah, and the people in the movie suffer terribly. But it's really interesting because the movie focuses on their nobility.
Yes.
And how they're strong and how this is a good thing.
Yeah.
rather than you know, which... And I think people saw that movie being a Chinese movie and said, oh, this is propaganda. This is to teach people to love their suffering and their cruel communist... I don't buy that at all. I think it's about, you know... I think it's about... The sun blowing up is a metaphor for the very real threat we're facing. I think in general, the public perception is that, you know, and certainly China's climate response can be criticized, yet they have one, but it can be criticized. At least there is the public perception that, like, we have to dig deep in time of crisis and we have to band together and, you know. And that's well ahead of where we are at.
Yes.
Where we're largely, when we talk about climate, it's like, okay, well, where am I going to put my bunker? And how many guns should I buy?
or it's not even going to happen. Or somebody will invent something and...
Yeah. Geoengineering, the sky will be gray forever.
Yeah. But we'll be fine. And my life won't, you know, noticeably change.
Yeah, and I won't have to give up on double Big Macs or whatever. Right. I can keep
eating bigger Macs.
I can keep eating meat and driving a Hummer forever. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Or a pickup truck.
And like filling my home with more and more electronic devices that spy on me and I leave on 24/7.
Hey, now. That's a different show.
It's intertwined. Also, I can mine Bitcoin.
Oh, God. Bitcoin, my favorite thing. Yeah, so I think that's, you know, like The Wandering Earth is sort of another one of those things of like, we can do this if we just do this.
Yeah, right? And but it will hurt.
It will hurt.
It will hurt.
What's her name? That young lady.
Greta Thunberg.
Yeah, yes. That's the one. She's very good at talking about this.
Absolutely.
And saying, you need to fucking do something now. And then a year later saying, you didn't do anything. You said a lot of nice things and you said you were going to do stuff, but you've done
nothing. Yeah.
We don't have time to fuck around on this one. Mm-hmm. Start doing something.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, whenever I see, I saw someone post on social media, like something, but like the picture of their child, a young woman, and like, this is the generation that's going to fix things. To which I say, fuck you. Don't do that to your kid. Yeah. You do it. You do it, you asshole. All of you ass. If you're an adult right now listening to this, look in the mirror and say, you asshole, you have to fucking do something about this. God. It's your job. It's not your kid's job. Fuck you.
If we wait 20 years until, you know, the generation that are right now children are adults and can actually do something, it's way too late.
Yeah, we'll cross the Rubicon.
We've got until, like, what, like 2040 or something before basically everything.
Before it's locked in.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's that, yeah.
We won't necessarily see all of the effects by then, but we won't be able to stop anything anymore. And you're like, well, you know, 20 years, and they can get to work on it. And like, I guess, yeah, they'll have a fire under their ass, like, quite literally.
Yeah. Yeah, and and here's the thing I guess I want to talk about, which is my big impetus for doing this episode. It's like, the thing, we're not doing anything, but there's actually like a million things we could be doing.
Yes.
Like all of the things.
There is a huge number of things.
There's a massive, massive number of things, right, we could be doing in terms of we could, you know, and we're only doing really a very small fraction of them. And I think one of the big things is, as I said earlier, a lot of our power, a lot of our carbon output flows from our grid, the energy grid. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the things that's troubling to me is everyone's like, well, we got to get on building this smart grid, putting the solar panels up and doing all these things. And and Germany's really great. We need to follow what Germany is doing. And that Germany is the model for the green energy grid we need to build. That's extremely problematic as a viewpoint. Because, it's a solution that relies on inventing a bunch of new technology, developing a bunch of energy storage that doesn't exist, and building a whole giant complex energy system that is run by computers. And again, you know, just inventing a whole new way of doing energy versus an existing zero emission energy source that you can take and you can just plug in where the coal plants were.
What are you talking about, Stephen?
I'm talking about nuclear power, where you take some fissile material and you put in some salts or some water and you make it hot and you turn a turbine with it and you can just build a plant.
Proven technology.
Yeah, that we know how to do. Canada's a CANDU reactor, incredibly safe, effective device, it has a lot of advantages even over like the small modular nuclear reactors everyone's trying to build now. Again, even our nuclear solutions, we're like, okay, well, we need to build nuclear plants. Let's build small modular reactors. So to build a small modular reactor, you need a giant hardened steel tube that can only be made at one smelting plant in Japan, and they take like 8 months to build. And we need to thousands of these yesterday.
I'm liking the sound of this.
Yeah, so, but no, we have, again, you don't need the small modular reactor. You don't need a new thing. You don't need to invent anything. You have good things now. They're perfectly safe. They work great. Canada has an amazing plant in Ontario, does incredible things. Clean. Clean, zero emission energy. You know, right? Of course, Germany decommissioned
shutting them all down.
Its nuclear power plants after 2011 because of the Fukushima Daiichi incident.
Which, you know, was not great, but also was not
bad. Yeah. Well, and most of the problem, like, there was an issue. I think one of the big things was the thing that made Fukushima so scary was the evacuations the Japanese government did, and they evacuated a lot of people.
Right? Yeah,
and
they
pumped in and they captured a lot of water, and it was very expensive and created a big hardship and was very hard on a lot of people. I think there's a debate as to how much Japan overreacted in terms of actually from the safety guidelines that actually exist, right?
Yeah, I think the government or at least the Japanese courts have sort of said at this point, like, you overreacted.
Yeah, yeah. And so like, people are really upset about like the release of the water. Japan recently dumped all the water they sequestered. But of course, the half-life of the isotope that everyone's afraid of, the iodine replacing isotope, is like long over, like decade, like it's decayed to a negligible amount a long time ago, like a decade ago, because it's measured in weeks, not years. so we have this thing where, you know, the isotopes have decayed and they dump the water back, and it's a huge international incident. And this is because the understanding of nuclear is so poor and everything. So you know,
well, that's radioactive material now, though.
Yeah. So. In many ways, Fukushima is really an incident of things working, right? Because what happened was in a crazy, like, miracle of physics, a bunch of hydrogen got electrolyzed underneath the containment, and then that hydrogen exploded. And so what you had was basically a bomb went off inside the reactor, and the containment, the reactor got just totaled, and the containment cracked.
Right.
And out of that containment, the crack in the containment, many, many liters of water poured. It's not great.
No, it's not great. And I'm not saying we should aim for this.
But it in many ways exemplifies how even like, and this were not the safest reactors we could build.
No.
Right? These were on the more dangerous scale. Like these, there wasn't a CANDU reactor, although CANDU is a water reactor.
There's also correct me if I'm wrong here, a large portion of Canada doesn't suffer from tidal waves.
No, yeah, or earthquakes even.
Yeah.
Barring the places where we hydraulically fracked and created earthquake zones in formerly seismically stable areas.
Like Saskatchewan's last tidal wave was... millions of
when theropods walked the earth. I don't know, actually, but
I mean, it's not recorded.
Yeah,
but,
the tsunami came in from the Hudson's Bay.
Back in 1892,
Moose Factory was wiped out.
York Factory, Manitoba was completely underwater,
gone. I mean, because it would have to get through Manitoba to get to Saskatchewan.
Exactly.
Yeah. This has been Canadian geography.
Yeah, no, there are many, many places in the world that aren't on a coast.
Yeah.
That we can put nuclear reactors. Mm-hmm. And
it's great because they generate so much, you can just transmit the energy. Like, they're very high yield, so you can transmit. You can send the power to the coast.
Sure.
You can transform
like we do
it.
Now.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, so anyway, so like that's one thing, right? You know, and there's also stuff like we could start. One of the things is like we currently have all the technology we need to begin a sustainable capture, right? We can do, we can use renewables or nuclear or other sources or even just like quite self-sustainable like sequestration practices now, right? Mm-hmm. So there's a process called microwave pyrolyzation where we can collect biomass either from the ocean or from polluted lakes where, like, you know, we've, again, our other form of pollution, fertilizer pollution, where nitrogen and the phosphates have concentrated in water bodies and water courses, use that water to grow plants, and then we take those plants and we turn them into inert charcoal, and we put them safely away where they won't interact with the global carbon cycle anymore.
Yep.
Right, or we can do direct air capture where we turn them into various type of like plastic granules by bubbling it through water and then, you know, using a reagent to react it out. That's great. You know, Korea inked a deal with Samsung to build some boats that are going to be nuclear piles and they're going to float around and they're going to sequester biomass. Right, surprisingly, Korea has maybe the best of all the ones I've seen. Korea has like the best sequestration plants. You know, and ultimately, like the problem is they're trying to make hydrocarbon products often is the problem. Like
we can just turn this into a biodiesel.
Yeah, yeah, to make a biodiesel or a plastic or something that they want to just, and they don't want to just like put it back in the ground. They want to like then circulate it in the economy because
this
of
is the
imperative.
Is that we need governments that are going to say, okay, we will pay for the direct air capture and the product is filling old mine shafts with, yeah, with the byproduct, like with the product here. Yeah. We don't want you to turn this into a biofuel and let anyone burn it again. We want it gone.
Yeah, the product is inert charcoal we can dump in the hole and never not think about it ever again.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Or something that could be, I mean, I'm okay with turning something into like a recyclable plastic.
Yeah, because like, well, at least it's sequestered.
Yeah, it's still sequestered.
For quite a while.
You know, we're not, ideally, we're not just having people burning these things. Don't burn plastic, people.
Yeah, so like there's things, absolutely, right? Again, so if our, when we remove the profit motive,
right,
we can start to do things that aren't financially maximally profitable.
I just came to a realization. Capitalism is the problem.
Ah, yeah, right. Remember we were talking about in the Civil War how there was like this small group of large landowners who were the only political constituency for the government?
I do remember that conversation.
Yeah, well, that's the problem we have now.
Yes.
Where we have a government that has a very small set of finance interests.
Constituents, yeah.
That are their core constituency.
And any, like, if there's a lot of people working on this problem.
Mm-hmm.
And they come up with a lot of really great solutions that could be implemented. Tweaking technology that exists right now, finding new applications for technology, whatever. But it never gets anywhere because somebody goes, well, how can I make money off of that? Well, you can't. The money making has been done.
yeah. And so either have to take it from the people who profited off it or you have to print it.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Both of which are very good options.
Preferably a combination.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like I'll, you know, a combination is fine. One or the other, it works. We don't really, you know, a billionaire is a policy failure. Mm-hmm. So get rid of those to start with. And then we'll see where we end, you know?
see where we land.
We need a big wealth tax. We need a progressive income tax. And we need governments to start printing money and giving it to people who are solving this climate problem instead of people who are creating more of it.
Yeah, we're trying to then, like, speculate on trying to get puts and options against future climate crisis.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
In fact, that should be illegal. It should be illegal to bet on the demise
of
the habitability of our planet.
Yes.
You can't. We are in it to win, and people who are not supportive. This was a war, and people were betting on your country losing. You would call them a traitor,
mm-hmm.
and you would sanction them.
Yeah.
Right? Well, this is...
Well...
well, ideally. I would say the lay person, I would say, would understand that.
Yes.
Right? And would be like, oh, but what about his... You know, he's just a self-interested capitalist trying to profit. Of course he was selling secrets to our enemy.
Right. Yeah.
Of course he was trying to profit off of our defeat. people understand that. Well, I think we should have the same mentality, right? That this is a dire situation, and if you are trying to escape, if you are a coward, if you're running away from this fight, if you're trying to hasten it for your own advantage, you are a criminal. And I don't mean like a real criminal. And I don't mean like, you know, homeless people who fall asleep in public, which is crime. I mean like. A real criminal. Like, in there with child molesters and murderers criminal.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Like, serial killers.
Yeah, that's the level of criminal you are.
Yep.
Yeah, and they should be treated as such.
I'm going to ask a favor of people who are listening, that you share with us your favorite, like, existing technology right now, like a solution. It doesn't really even matter what size it is. Just, like, here's a thing that we could do right now that would help the climate crisis, like help avert.
Yeah, either to reduce our emissions or to do capture or to organize us in some way. Yeah.
Share those with us because I always love hearing about more of them. I think it's a really great thing. And you all probably have heard of some that I have not heard of. Every time that I am on the internet, I see something. I'm like, that's brilliant. You know, like
that's so cool.
Different building techniques so that we just don't live in houses that are designed for a different climate. Right. And then we're forever trying to heat and or cool them, because they're just not built for the environment they're in.
Just build rammed earth.
Yeah, I mean, sure, something
that's
like
good
that,
for all
know?
Climates. And,
good. Look, I love me some air conditioning. Makes places comfortable, but
unsustainable.
It's super unsustainable. It's expensive because it's very energy intensive. It just takes heat and moves it. It doesn't actually like deal with it in any way. And also the leakage from air conditioning. Those chemicals,
chlorofluorocarbons.
Yeah, I don't know if that's exactly what they are anymore, but yeah. What the refrigerants. The refrigerants from air conditioners
are also a greenhouse gas.
A way more potent greenhouse gas. Like mm-hmm. CO2 is bad. Mm-hmm. And methane is like 10 times as bad as that. And these things dwarf methane.
Yeah.
By orders of magnitude. Okay, great. I love air conditioning, but also I feel like an asshole every time I turn it on. But I also feel like I'm going to die if I don't turn it on.
Yeah.
God damn it.
Yeah, you can't win, right? And this is... And I think, like, you can only lose slightly less.
Right. Yeah, yeah,
and
yeah.
But if
my building had been built better and it had, like, a courtyard, mm-hmm. so that the courtyard was always in the shade, mm-hmm. we'd have, like, a source of cool air.
Yeah, because trees...
All day long.
Yeah, because trees are how you air condition.
Yeah, right? Yeah. Like, if you have enough trees around. That's the other thing, right? Trees. There's a biologist or... urban tree person lady. She's great. I think she's at the University of Ottawa now. And she found, like, if you can get 40% tree cover in an urban environment, you will decrease the temperature by, like, 3 degrees.
Mm-hmm.
3 degrees!
Yeah.
That goes from being, like,
30 to
gross
20s.
To bearable.
Yeah.
Or from bearable to comfortable.
Yeah.
Just by having more trees. And you know what? It also makes things look great.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I have some trees. The side of my house that's under trees is cooler than the side of my house that isn't.
Like, right. Like, wild, right?
Like, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Plant more trees.
Yeah. Well, we need to because they're also... I mean, you talk about direct air capture. The photosynthetic cell is the greatest direct air capture that exists.
Yeah.
Yeah. You don't need...
So we need to grow more trees, bury them underground, and then grow new ones to replace them.
Yeah, well, then you need to, yeah.
I'm being a bit facetious there. It's more complicated than that. But
yeah, no, absolutely. And I think I will say, like, I do want to maybe, I know we're running long, but I do want to speak to this thing about the grid in Germany, right? Because the problem is Germany decommissioned its nuclear plants, and what it brought in was, again, tidal and solar and wind. But the problem is those don't run all the time. So to solve the intermittency problem, they brought in liquid natural gas generation. Germany's carbon emissions go up and up and up when they were very low, the lowest in Europe, and they're skyrocketed. And so the problem is the green part of this project that everyone's pushing right now is not green.
Right, right.
And that's a huge problem. And so this is the other way where, like, we could, again, completely fuck ourselves. We could have a Green New Deal that emits more carbon and locks us into a long-term carbon emission program that will doom us.
Yeah.
The solution could fuck us if we're not careful.
Yes.
Also.
Yeah, like every policy, the devil is in the details.
Yeah.
Dr. Jesse Jenkins, I don't know where he's based. He's American somewhere. He has done some fabulous work on energy grids and transitions and looking at the necessity of nuclear power, mm-hmm. and sort of the nuclear is a really great baseline.
Yeah.
Power source. Like it puts out power mm-hmm. day and night, 24/7. It just goes. And if you have a 100 megawatt nuclear power plant, that's what you get from it.
Yeah. And you just feed the pellets in there. Very, very few. It's very light.
Yeah. It's not like fish.
Yeah.
It's like,
yeah. A piece of uranium the size of your thumb would like is like 10,000 barrels of oil of energy. Like,
and you can then layer on top of that base energy level coming from nuclear power. You can throw some wind on that. You can throw some solar on that. You can throw some geothermal on that. And then it's like people are like, oh well, what about when the wind's not windy? Well. nuclear is still going.
Yeah.
And maybe the sun is shining at the same time.
Yeah.
And so we got both. And it's very hard to cool the core of the Earth. Mm-hmm. So the geothermal is doing its thing. You know, like we have green options.
Yeah, but they're not a universal option for all people in all times.
Right.
And the problem is also now you have the developed countries through like their international like mechanism is disseminating the green energy solution to the third world. And this became a big problem in South Africa, right? Mm-hmm. Where like there's a very good Decoupled podcast where they interviewed an energy policy consultant from South Africa. And basically they were like, okay, they have nuclear power there, I believe. And they were like, okay, we need to expand our grid. And so so Germans came in and said, okay, you're going to build a green grid. And so what they did is they built all this like solar and stuff, and it created huge intermittency problems. And so what it led to was just like poor people dealing with massive intermittency problems and rich people buying diesel backups. And so what happened is, and so then on paper, they went and said, see, we reduced the carbon emissions. Did you count all the carbon from the diesel you burned when you weren't? Because, again, an individual diesel generator is far less efficient than a grid-level, even like a grid-level coal or gas plant, right? So,
yeah.
Oh, my God. This is it's a huge problem.
But then you can avoid counting them, right? Because you can say, well, the power grid has this.
Well, yeah, and this is the thing.
An individual burning a diesel generator, well, we can't control that.
Yeah, we don't count.
So it doesn't count. Yeah. It doesn't count on the grid.
Yeah. Yeah. So this thing, you can have these paper achievements.
Yeah.
You know, and again, devil's in the details, I guess.
For sure.
So that's, I'll get off, I'll stop.
Though, okay. But I am going to say that solar power is a great option.
Yes.
And you know, like there's lots of jurisdictions that are allowing and encouraging people to put solar on their house, and are forcing grids. Because the grid is like, it's just a power line. So they're forcing grids. I know it's more complicated than that. Please, nobody who's an actual power expert, yell at me about this. But they're forcing grids to actually like allow people to have solar on their house and put it back into the grid.
Build renewables, reduce your carbon output, you know, increase your efficiency. Those things are good.
Right.
Building solar panels and windmills as a complete replacement for the entire grid at this time,
yeah,
is not viable.
No,
and it shouldn't be pursued in exclusion of a completely viable and easy to deploy solution of nuclear power.
Yes.
Right,
the existing possible technology we could just put online.
Yeah, so you should do the thing that works and work on the other thing.
Please do the thing that works.
But don't not do the thing that works, hoping that eventually the thing you want to work
right
will work eventually.
Like maybe we'll get dilithium crystals.
Yeah, maybe.
It'll be fine.
Maybe Vulcans will land. I don't know.
Right, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we got to be getting close to Zephyr and Cochrane's flight. So
it's like 20 years away, man.
But you can't bank on that.
We can't all wait for Zephyr and Cochrane. And then we'd have a third world war anyway. And that's
well, that could
great.
Also happen. And wars are also extremely bad. The last thing I want to say something about flights.
Mm. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And also burning carbon, it really matters where you burn that carbon, right? So you're burning your car, driving around in the ground. It sits on the ground mostly, right? Most part. And where plants are, and then go, nom, nom, nom. and they eat it up, and it falls down, and it goes into the earth and in the water, which... Again, if you
still
do a lot
good.
Of that, still not great. But there's this other issue where people... But if you take it and you burn it in a jet, way, way up high, it stays there. And it sits there, and there it has lots of capacity to block infrared, right? To cause the titular greenhouse effect that we're talking about.
Yes.
Big problem.
There's not a lot of trees. Up where planes fly,
and you can't get it out. Yeah, yeah. And so it's a huge. So I think like we need to be antagonistic to emissions flight, and this also includes, I think, space, because going to space also is hugely. I mean, I'm you know,
yeah, yeah,
for,
yeah, yeah.
Particularly for vanity and yes. personal gratification reasons, space tourism
should
would be utterly disastrous. Kim Stanley Robinson's Ministry is the Future, which features an environmental group, which they're one of the ways they respond to climate change is by shooting down airplanes, which is a horrifying, murderous thing to do. But it does point to the fact that that is a very serious problem, and the flight issue needs to be addressed, right? And I think it's one of the things we personally can do what we can to avoid flying.
You know, not all hope is lost yet. Do be hopeful. Do, you know, institute changes where you can. But don't fool yourself into thinking that your changes and personal changes alone are enough. What's that? Agitate for change. Talk to your elected officials. Elect new officials.
Agitate for dramatic political and social restructuring of your society to change the way decision-making is done to have a wider constituency base.
Yeah. I would like to avoid the future where we have to shoot down planes, mm-hmm. if at all possible. So please.
Demand to be heard.
Yes.
Yeah.
Again, please do share any of the things that you've come across that you think are really neat climate technologies that exist, where, you know, I love all of them. Covers over canals.
Yeah, little floating rubber balls.
Yeah.
Painting all our roofs white.
You know, there's...
Increasing our albedo.
So many... Yeah. Yeah. Different types of insulation. There was a radio show that I was listening to, and they had a guy who is a chemical engineer, and he was creating new materials that could cover buildings or other large surfaces or whatever, reflects all of the heat coming in and transfers all of the heat from inside. What? Kind of thing. Okay. So like it doesn't heat up from the sun and can let heat from the outside out.
And it allows radiant heat to leave and also reflects.
Right. Yeah. Simultaneously. Mm-hmm. So like buildings don't heat up from the sun and can cool themselves. Amazing.
Cool.
You know, yeah. Not quite applicable yet at this point. And again, it's one of those technologies that we're hoping is blah, 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 blah. But it was really neat. So share those sorts of things with me. I love to hear about them. Also, share this show with your friends and your family and your neighbors. Just turn your speakers on as high as they go. Crank that up to 11 and make sure that everybody is hearing what we're talking about, because literally there is no way that too many people can hear this conversation.
It would mean a lot to us if you could do that.
Yeah, I mean, it means a lot to us because I'm vain, but also, you know, the way to convince people about the importance of this is to talk to them about the importance of this. Mm-hmm. And so you saying, hey, I heard a really great show about the importance of this thing, goes a long way to convincing people about the importance of this thing. So, you know, it might not convince your uncle to ditch his dually, but...
He's rolling coal. You know how expensive that was?
But it's a step, right? And we're working to get people there. And you can be a part of that project because it's a shared future.
Yeah. And at the end of the day, it's a political problem, which means it's a solvable problem.
Yeah.
Because it's ultimately just about people and decision making. It's not about science that we, you know, science that that only a few people can understand. It's about very real, concrete things we can address, and it's about the way we make decisions in our society.
Exactly.
Which needs to change for a myriad of other reasons also.
So many reasons. You obviously can find us on the internet. We are on Twitter and Instagram at AssetDroid. We are on Facebook, Androids and Assets, and our own website, androidsandassets.ca. Feel free to send us an email, info@androidsandassets.ca. We'll get to us. That's where we're at.
So next time you are filled with despair, thinking about your grandchildren fighting over scraps of food, put us on and get real mad.